Thomas Torino is a Steinway artist, the recipient of many international awards, and an active recording artist, and is considered the leading authority and one of the finest interpreters of the music of Ernesto Lecuona. Thomas Yehuda Torino, welcome to Crossover, Tom.
Well, thank you, Jill. Nice to be here.
Well, it's there's a lot to talk about, but you opened to playing on our piano here in the studio with a very famous strain of Malagueña by Ernesto Lecuona. And we were chatting before you started to play about the piece. I'm sure that our audience knows this piece by heart. We've heard it in every guise. But tell us a little bit about the way it was originally written and then what has happened. It's been, of course, transcribed so many, many times.
Well, the thing with Malagueña, which has been forgotten along the way, in which I've tried to sort of reintroduce to the public regarding Lecuona's music, is that the original conception of this piece was as a very serious, challenging, difficult, virtuosic work for piano solo. Subsequently, as you stated, the piece has been arranged in every conceivable combination. I once heard an arrangement for jazz band with Swahili words added.
Oh my goodness.
So it's become this huge souped-up thing, which it's really not. It was composed in 1929, and it was composed separately, not as a part of the whole suite Andalusia, for a specific occasion in Havana. And what has happened even in the piano solo version, of course, there's been easy arrangements, but a lot of the difficulties in the earlier versions of it, the original conceptions by the composer and publications, have been watered down. So what I've done in my performances and in my recordings and my research is to restore the composer's original conception.
Can you just illustrate the difference between what he wrote just in the right hand?
Well, they're subtle. Towards the middle section of the piece, there's one section where there's in the right hand, which is a tenth, of course, which is difficult if you don't have a large enough hand. And now it simply comes.
So they made it.
It becomes single notes. Ah. And even further on, which are tenths and have now become octaves because it's easier to play on the hand and in the upper register. It doesn't sound out as clearly with the tenth unless you really have the span to do it. So, and many other subtle changes.
Do you think he did that for a particular reason? Was he a pianist, Lecuona?
He himself was a phenomenal pianist and actually began his career as a concert pianist. He was left-handed, so a lot of his music has extraordinarily
really?
Difficult left-hand writing.
That's very interesting. I never realized that if you were southpaw or if you're, you know, ambidextrous or if you're just righty, that it really affects piano playing, but evidently it does.
Well, it not only affected his piano playing, it affected his compositional style.
Really?
Particularly in a lot of his Afro-Cuban dances and Cuban dances, in which Lecuona quite uniquely recreates the sound of a Cuban percussion section, bongos and conga drums, with the piano left-hand forms. And what it does, it creates a tremendous problem for pianists who aren't used to using a lot of their left hand, because you really have to have a very clean articulation within these rhythmic forms that he's added. Things like, you know, all these articulated things, or piano is really in the left hand creating the percussion section.
Yes.
And you've really got to practice that quite slowly and control it.
I think they did mention that in the liner notes, that Lecuona left very sketchy ideas and the orchestration had to be fleshed out.
Yes. Part of the problem in interpreting and studying Lecuona's output, or oeuvre, if you want to call it, is not only the difficulty in finding the music, which was an adventure almost unto itself, but interpreting the music, because there are so many scattered fragments, versions, arrangements that the composer left. What I've done is I've researched virtually all of his manuscripts, the published versions, both here in Cuba, abroad, Argentina, and also researched a lot of his old recordings, some of which were never released in these countries, on 78 RPM disc. I researched his piano rolls, which he made for Ampico and DuoArt, and I found those in a collection in someone's closet in Wisconsin.
Oh, my goodness.
And it wasn't just the piano music I went after. I researched all of his songs, his orchestral works, and so forth. And what became very clear is that over the years, he changed versions of particular pieces for his piano pieces. What he composed in a manuscript in 26 and 55 was different. Usually the latter version is what he recorded. So if a change was made consistently over the years from a manuscript, but his recordings showed a consistent change, I employed that. If it was just something for the day or for the moment, because music wasn't so etched in stone back then, it was a little more fluid in style, then I just attributed to that. I'm also involved in the republication of his piano music.
I guess I should have asked you this first. What started your interest in Lecuona? I mean, you as a pianist have an enormous repertoire to draw from. What happened?
Well, it's very interesting because, I mean, I still, of course, perform regular repertoire. I play all the Mozart concerti and a lot of Liszt works, and that's what my career was founded on. But I also incorporated into my regular repertoire a lot of pieces by Albéniz, Granados, and Falla. And it's a very interesting human interest story because I was sitting with a very dear friend of mine who was an Orthodox rabbi.
Yes.
I think this is a testament to the universal appeal of Lecuona's music, too. And he turned to me and he said to me in my Hebrew name, he said, Yehuda, he said, you play a lot of Granados, Albéniz, and Falla. Why don't you do Lecuona? And of course, my answer was, well, who's he? I didn't have a clue.
Malagueña, you knew, but you didn't
well,
know.
Well, he subsequently told me he wrote Malagueña and Siboney, and I said, oh, that's popular music.
I can't
possibly do that. I'm a serious pianist, you know. He said, no, he has all these beautiful recordings and music. It hasn't been done. You'll love it. He sent me a recording of his music, and that's how it began. I fell in love with it.
Well, I can understand why, but I do remember that even as a child, Xavier Cugat, and of course it was Siboney was a popular thing, and of course people danced to it and so on.
Very few people realize that Lecuona was the one who introduced Cugat to the rumba form.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Lecuona was sort of a granddaddy for a lot of Cuban music. And for a lot of Cuban music forms. He was the first one to bring indigenous Afro-Cuban forms and dances into the concert hall and into the salons in a time when that was considered a little risque to do.
It was. Well, of course, it was a little sensual, I suppose. You know?
Well, it's...
One didn't do that.
It was very adventurous for the time and the day, and that, I think, made it something very new and fresh and popular. He himself, as a marvelous pianist, of course, had a compositional style deeply entrenched in Western European classical romantic tradition. So his music shows that. He definitely has a harmonic framework, which is Central European-based.
Mm-hmm.
With Spanish dance forms married to that, and a third part of that marriage is the indigenous Cuban forms. So this sort of hybrid style that he has just has such a wide range. I mean, he not only composes Cuban dances, Afro-Cuban dances, waltzes, polkas. It's just amazing, the output of this man in 53 theater works and an opera.
Now, what years are you talking about, pretty much?
Well, he was born in 1895. He composed his first piece at the age of 11, Cuba and America, which was used in a lot of marching bands in this country before the Castro regime came in.
Really?
Yes, it was played a lot. And he died in 1963.
But I guess he was, that was, I guess, the late 30s. I suppose, early 30s,
well,
late 30s. He was in Hollywood. I mean, he did.
Yes, he also did film scores for MGM, Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very cavalier in his compositional style because he would be at a party talking to someone, and in the middle of a conversation, he would say, excuse me, and he would just leave them and go in the room and compose.
Well, they probably inspired him to write something.
But even in the most, innocuous of situations, he'd be having a drink and he would say to someone, give me a cocktail napkin. and he would scribble music on a cocktail napkin at a party, you know.
Well, you know what's kind of interesting? I mean, that almost sounds like an affectation, but I do think that the creative urge does, yeah. It happens with artists,
yes,
certainly, and I would imagine that if he suddenly had an idea, he didn't want to lose it. So,
yeah, yeah.
So that was really something. So this must have impacted on your career tremendously when you started, as far as programming your performances.
Yes, because like I said, I always programmed a lot of Albanian, Granados, and Faya in my traditional programs. But now this gave me, it was sort of a natural extension of all that work on those Spanish forms, because it gave me a greater palette to program.
Mm-hmm.
So I started programming Lacuona in my concerts. I would do a very traditional first half. One of my favorites was doing Wanderer Fantasy and Janacek Sonata.
Oh my.
And a first half and an all Lacuona second half. And people just loved it because, it, you know, you have this staunch, you know, traditional first part of the program, and the second half was like a breath of sunshine and fresh air for people.
But it is stylistically, it conjures up a certain period of time, a certain era. And
an era of more elegance.
Yes,
and
yes, yes, yes. And it is very classical. I mean, you
no question.
Get that.
That's one thing which I've readdressed with his music. Lacuona's music for many years, unfortunately so, became the almost the exclusive property of lounge pianists.
Yes.
Because of these souped-up arrangements.
Right.
And what I've tried to do is go back to the original conception of the composer, which was classical music. And one thing that I'm tickled pink about is that when I first went looking for some Lacuona recordings, I had to go into the world music section of the record shop,
mm-hmm.
under Latin music.
Right.
Now Lacuona has his own composer bin in the classical section.
In the classical section, due, I guess, largely to you.
Well, I would like to think so.
Now, you have also a release out of music by Joaquin Nin. Now, I don't think many of our people, our listeners, know about Nin. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Nin was one of Lacuona's many teachers and was also quite a famous figure in Spanish classical music. He was involved in the republication of Soler's music.
Oh, sure.
And came out with several volumes. And his daughter was the very infamous Anais Nin.
Really? Aha. Uh-huh. Well, that one we know.
Of course.
Gorgeous writing, though.
So his output was limited, and I recorded his complete piano music for Koch International, the CD for that. And it was a natural segue after Lacuona, because I recorded the complete piano music by Lacuona and piano orchestral works for BIS, the label, mm-hmm. BIS, in five volumes. And then after that, Koch International approached me and wanted to do a Latin American music series, also in five volumes. So I chose to pick one composer from a different country for each volume that I felt was unjustly neglected. So for the first volume, Cuba, I chose Nin. The second volume, Brazil, will be coming out in November of this year with the music of Ernesto Nazare.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
And subsequently, volumes 3, 4, and 5 will be Argentina, Guastavino, volume 4, Mexico, Ponce, and volume 5 is a surprise of mine. I'm not going to say
yet. A surprise.
Yet.
Now, your second language, of course, is Spanish, I think, at this rate, right?
Well, I speak 8 languages, Jill.
Really?
Yes,
oh,
I do.
Oh, isn't that amazing? Oh, my goodness. Well, you are a man of many talents. A little bit about your background. You are a graduate of the Juilliard School.
Yes.
Who did you study with there?
I studied in pre-college with Edgar Roberts, Jane Carlson, and in the graduate division, the performing arts division, I studied with Sasha Gornitsky.
Oh, well, okay. Sasha Gornitsky was very, very choosy about the students that he took. I think that's
I was very pleased that he, and very honored, in fact, that he chose me.
Yes.
And what was nice about it is Sasha took me as really under his wing. And I attribute a lot of to my musical development to him, because he didn't have me study with any assistants. I was only to study with him.
Did he have a particular repertoire that he...
Well, of course, the traditional repertoire, I learned a lot from him, you know, Bach, Chopin, Liszt, and so forth. But I brought in a lot, again, a lot of Albanian, Granados, and Faya. And he used to say, "Oh, Tom, play that again." And I remember one of his students was studying the pelele, el pelele of Granados, and she brought it in. The poor thing, she, Sasha just said, "Oh, go listen to Tom play it. Ask him how to play that piece."
Oh, the one from the Goyescas is so very beautiful. The Maiden and the Nightingale.
That's actually one of my signature pieces.
Oh, I
play
love
that a lot.
That. It's such a beautiful thing. Do you have a recording of that?
No, but I'll have to come back and perform that in the studio
for
you.
Well, that's a date. Now, you also, of course, I'm sitting here with some of your recordings. You have an album of music by Edward McDowell. And is that that was done in, what, 92, I guess?
Yes. Before I came to Lecuona and the music of the Spanish idiom, I was always interested in doing something which was very beautiful but very different, and I felt not sort of neglected. So my very first recording was the complete works for piano and orchestra by Paderewski. And I received a citation of honor from the Paderewski Foundation for my contribution to Polish culture in that. And, of course, I recorded that with the Polish National Symphony.
Now you have some connection with Poland, is that right?
Yes, absolutely, from my mother's side. So I went to Poland to record it. I figured, well, if I'm going to record this music, I've got to do it with the Polish National Symphony. So that was issued on Newport Classic. Then I was looking for something else different. So I came across the two piano concerti of Edward McDowell, and I recorded them for the Centaur label with the Bulgarian Radio Symphony, and we performed the second concerto in the Sofia Music Weeks Festival, and I gave the world premiere of any McDowell work in that country.
Really?
It had never been performed. So that was exciting to do, and I'm very proud of that that accomplishment. And then from there, I was looking for another project. So I had done a lot of touring of Eastern Europe and played in the Bolshoi in Moscow and St. Petersburg. And of course, when I gave my New York debut, I wanted a very special work. And I went to my dear friend, David Diamond, who of course just passed away, unfortunately, this past week. And I said, "David, I'd like to do something for my New York debut." And he said, "Well, I'll write you a piece." Mm. And David knew that I was a very religious Jew. And he said, "Well, I'm writing you a Kol Nidre for piano solo." Oh, so he wrote and dedicated a Kol Nidre for me for piano solo. And I gave its debut in Lincoln Center.
Now, you're touring a great deal. As a matter of fact, I believe you're leaving this evening for
yes.
Europe. And you will be touring what countries?
I'll be in Switzerland, in France, and in Spain, of course.
Now, again, when they hear your name, do they say, "Aha, Lecuona"? No.
Well, certainly when they in the conoscenti in the musical world, they know about my contribution to Lecuona, and they think that. I'm sort of the programming a traditional first half and a Spanish second half, and I mix in now Nin Nasare Lecuona Guastavino, because I don't want people to think me, God forbid, that I'm a one trick pony, because I'm not.
You know, I can understand that, because you are really kind of unearthing the works of some very fine composers, and the music is very beautiful, and it is not known at all, really.
No,
it's been limited in terms of disseminating it, you know, even in this country.
And certainly from my background, my father being Italian, Argentine, my mother being a Polish Jew.
You have a very wealth of something, I guess, history to draw on.
Yes, and from my background and training as a serious classical pianist, I approach it as I would if I was learning a new piece by Schumann or Liszt. I approach it the same way. The problem with this music is it's always been viewed with a slanted eye as, oh, that Latin thing, oh, that mm-hmm. Spanish stuff, you know. And that's unfortunate. Because if you approach the music on its own terms, study it, the forms, the harmonic language, the musical styles, there really is a rich discovery of classical music.
We look forward to hearing you perform more. And, of course, when you release your newest album, we'll be performing.
Yes. Well, as I said, I have now 8 recordings to date. The Paderewski works for piano and orchestra on Newport. The McDowell Concerti on Centaur. the five volumes of Lecuona's Complete Music for Piano and Piano and Orchestra on BIS, B-I-S, and now the new five CD series for Koch International, first volume being released of Nin, and the second volume in November of Nazaré from Brazil.
From Brazil. Well, we, once again, you're not going to get away from us that quickly, so we hope you'll come back to cross
over. I would be delighted. Thank you for inviting me,
Jill. A delight, Thomas.